Real quick, just if you guys have no idea on what a metaprogrammer is, this is the definition. A metaprogram is the programs in our minds that operate at a level meta to our content thinking, and it refers to the sorting devices that we use in perceiving, paying attention to information, and inputting and processing the stimuli around us. So, I mean, there's a lot that's packed into that one sentence, but this kind of lays the groundwork for what we're going to be going over. So essentially, we use metaprograms to help us with figuring out people, and pretty much we try to figure out people on a day-to-day basis as it is, even without knowing what the metaprograms are. Now, whether we're trying to figure what people's motives are, trying to second guess their intentions, or maybe even just psychoanalyzing without a license with whom we live with, we're constantly trying to figure out people. And there's also a great quote by a guy named Richard Simmons that says that people are not nouns but processes. So that begs a couple of questions. First off, how does a person think in a mode? Or how does a person talk, act, behave, and relate? And lastly, what patterns and processes describes this person's style of for sorting or paying attention to information? Now, we can figure out all of this information just through understanding the types of metaprograms that person has running. So if you have watched my previous video on what is NLP, then you're probably familiar with this picture already, but we're going to go over it real quick. This is the NLP communication model. So everything starts off, first off, with an external event that happens. So it could be anything that happens outside in the world. It starts off, it's just an external event. It's something that happens outside of us. And from that external event, we have filters that we use that delete, distort, and generalize whatever happened from this external event. And one of the filters that we use to delete, distort, and generalize is the metaprograms, along with values, beliefs, attitudes, decisions, memories, all that good stuff. But for the purpose of this video series, we're just going to be focusing on strictly the metaprograms. And then once we go through these filters, it finally goes into our internal representation, which affects our state and physiology. And it affects us also at an unconscious and conscious level, and based on how it interacts between our internal representation, our states, and our physiology, that's what goes and creates our behavior. So metaprograms plays a very key role in how we perceive and how we interact with the world. So there's a couple of benefits of really just understanding what the metaprograms are about and how to go about using them. First off, it's going to help you with appreciating other people's differences. Once you can understand that everybody kind of processes information a little bit differently than you, then you're going to have a deeper appreciation for how other people communicate and try to be a little bit more understanding of them. It's going to help you with being a lot more flexible in communication, because once you understand the type of metaprograms that somebody's running, you'll be able to alter your communication accordingly. It also will give you increased prediction accuracy, as just an increased sense of empowerment, because you're going to be armed with information that a lot of people don't know or just haven't even heard of. So this is really going to put you in a very powerful state, and hopefully that you use this information for good. Use it to be able to improve your communication and be able to connect with people on a much deeper way. So the first types of metaprograms we're going to be talking about is called the mental metaprograms. So the mental metaprograms are the metaprograms that are involved in our thinking, sorting, and perceiving. And essentially, they describe how our attention functions in terms of how it attends and processes information cognitively and what it attends. So the first motor program we're going to be going over is called a chunk size. So just the overall concept of a chunk size, everyone has a personal preference in regards to the size of the chunk of information when thinking, communicating, learning, etc. So there's a couple of different types of chunk sizes that you could fall under. So inductive thinkers are people that start with specific details and move upwards to draw general conclusions. So a perfect example of an inductive thinker would be like a scientist. A scientist goes and they gather evidence, and then based on the pieces of evidence that they gather, they're able to generalize to much higher principles and draw general conclusions based on their findings. A deductive thinker starts at the opposite end, where they'll start with general concepts and they'll move down with the more specific details. A perfect example of a deductive thinker would be like a philosopher. These are the type of people where they'll start general and they kind of like drill down to the specific. And then you have abductive thinkers, which are pretty much people that reason on the side, and these are the type of people that use metaphors and analogies. They're constantly comparing things to other things in order to make sense of things. So as a way to elicit this type of metaprogram, you can ask someone, when you pick up a book, what do you pay attention to first? The big picture, the book cover, or specific details about its value? Another question you can ask is, if we decide to work together on a project, would you first want to know what we generally will do, or would you prefer to hear a lot of specific details? And another good question to list as someone's chunk size is, what do you want first when you hear something new, the big picture or the details? So next we're going to be talking about relationship source. And the relationship source are one of the two basic ways that we mentally work with and compare data when we first confront new information. So there's a couple of ways there's a couple of categories that you can fall under. First off, there's sorting for sameness, which is where people who look for how things compare to a previous experience. Sameness of exception, people who look for similarities first, then differences. Mismatching, people who just look for differences. Mismatching with exception, people who look for differences first and then similarities. And then you have those people that sort for sameness and mismatching equally. Now, as a way to elicit this metaprogram, you can ask someone, what relationship do you first see between what you do now and what you did last year? Or what do you pay attention to first when you first walk into a room? Or how do you run your brain when you attempt to understand something new? Do you look for similarities or you check out the differences? Or in some cases, they might equally do both. Now, representational system source. Now, this refers to the representing sensory data that we receive from our external senses. Now, Bandler and Grindler, who are the two founders of NLP, noted that people tend to develop a highly favored representational system and use this for most of their thinking. So what are these representation systems? Well, you have your visual representers. These are people that are usually set up erect. They move their eyes upwards when visualizing. They breathe a bit high in the chest. They move quick. They use visual predicates such as seeing this, can you imagine that? I think I have a clear picture. And they tend to look directly at people. Then you got the auditory representers. These are people that tend to have the gift of gab. They demonstrate a sensitivity to volumes and tones and use a lot of auditory predicates such as, oh, I hear what you're saying, I got you loud and clear, it's soft, clear as a bell, that sounds about right. And they tend to move their eyes side to side when accessing information. Then you got your kinesthetic representers. These are people that move their eyes downward when accessing and using kinesthetic predicates. They say, oh, hey, I feel what you're saying. They use words like touch, grab, warm, hot. They tend to breathe very deeply. And these people tend to move a bit slower compared to other people. And they use like a lot of gestures. Then you got your auditory digital representers. These people often have very little awareness of pictures, sound, and sensations. And they tend to live in a world of worlds. They love lists, criteria, rules, etc. So if you were to elicit the representational system source from someone, you would ask them, when you think about something or learn something new, which channel do you prefer? Or which channel do you use most commonly? And this can refer to either the visual, the auditory, the kinesthetic, etc. So next we have information gathering style. Now, pretty much the overall concept is when processing data, we can either focus on the internal world of our subjectivity or focus on the external world. So uptime refers to people that have full sensory awareness of their environment. When listening, they process data by attending descriptively to the other person's responses. A downtime type of person is people that go inside of themselves and their internal awareness and have their own sounds, images, sensations, and they believe those internal sensations provide the most compelling data, and they tend to become blind and deaf to the external world. So a way to elicit someone's information gathering style, you can ask them, when you listen to a speech or conversation, do you tend to hear the sensory-based information, or do you go inside and listen for what the speakers mean? Or you can ask them, do you want to hear proof and evidence from the outside, or do you take more interest in your internal thoughts about it? Next, we have the epistemology sort. And essentially, there are two key ways that we can gather information from things, and that's by either using one's senses or by intuiting, by following your intuition, in other words. So you got pretty much two types of people here. You got the senses, you got the people that use the senses primarily for gathering information. These people tend to prefer dealing with concrete and actual information, and they function primarily as pragmatists and empiricists. Then you got your intuitors. Your intuitors are people that gather information through non-sensory means. They tend to approach things abstractly and holistically, and they look for relationships, possibilities, and appraise the larger significance of things. So a way to elicit someone's epistemology, you can ask them, if you began to study a subject, would you take more interest in facts and their applications for the now, or would you find more interest in the ideas and relationships between the facts and their application for the future? Okay, next we got perceptual category swords. Now, some minds operate more skillfully in discerning broad categories, while other minds are more precise with determining the gray areas or the in-between polar areas. So, you got the black and white type of people where they allow people to make clear and definite distinctions, and this often motivates someone to make a quick decision and adopt a more judgment perspective. And then you got the continuum type of people, which pretty much allows them to think at much finer levels, make fewer judgments, and they tend to be a little bit more indecisive. So a way to elicit this is to ask someone, when you think about things or make decisions, do you tend to operate in black and white categories, or does your mind go to the steps and stages in between? Next we have attribution style. Now we can either look at the problems, dangers, or challenges of a situation, or the opportunities, possibilities, or excitement, which in turn create either a worst case scenario or a best case scenario respectively. So for attribution style, you got the pessimists. The pessimists are the people who see problems and difficulties first. They tend to derive in fields like quality control analysis, troubleshooting problems, and proofreading. They always tend to be looking for what's wrong, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. That's just how some people's minds are programmed. And then you have the optimists, which these are the type of people who move through life with golden perspectives of dreams and visions. They can catch a vision and they can keep people motivated for the long term. So neither one of these things are necessarily good and bad. It's just a way of looking at things. So for elicitation, you can ask someone, when you look at a problem, do you tend first to consider the worst case scenario or the best? Does your mind go to problems and difficulties, or opportunities and positive challenges? Next, we got the perceptual durability sort. Now, this metaprogram addresses the quality of our mental constructs in terms of permeability or impermeability. So what do I mean by that? So you got the impermeable construct people. These are the people that typically move through life with ungiving beliefs and belief systems. I mean, once they have a belief, it's pretty much set in stone. Well, with permeable construct people, these are the people that are able to create mental constructs that are capable of being revised and extended in the light of new experiences. Now, as a way to elicit the perceptual durability source, now you could ask someone, as you begin to think about some of your mental constructs, your ideas of success and failure, of love and forgiveness, of relationships and works, of your personal qualities, do you find the representations of what you know as permanent or unstable? And how can you tell? Next, we have the focus sort. The focus sort refers to how much of the environment a person characteristically screens out. So there's two types of people. You got your non-screeners and your screeners. Your non-screeners are people who see, hear, smell, and otherwise sense a great deal of what goes on around them. They often experience places that are complex and they become overloaded with triggers for self-distraction. Next, you got your screeners. Your screeners are the people who move through the environment in a focused way that's screening out less relevant elements. So as a way to elicit this, you can ask someone, when you think about the kind of places where you can study or read, can you do this everywhere? Or do you find that some places seem too noisy or have too much of other stimuli that prevent concentration? You can ask them another question. Describe your favorite environment for concentrating on something. Or, how distractible do you find yourself generally in life, whether it's reading, playing, talking, thinking to yourself, etc.? Next, we had the philosophical direction. Now, our human minds, in terms of philosophical direction, alternate between why did this or that happen, or what does this or that mean in terms of origin or source. So you got your why people. Your why people are the people that value understanding the origin or source of something. They tend to get stuck in the past, or they're highly susceptible to sabotage cycles. The how people are people that sort for the usefulness or purpose of things. They tend to be solution focused rather than problem focused. So as a way to elicit this, you can ask someone, when you think about a subject, whether a problem or not, do you first think about causation, source and origins, the why, or do you think about use, function, direction or destiny? In other words, the how. Next, we got the reality structure sort. Now, this is how our minds think differently about the territory of reality, whether it's in terms of something static, permanent, solid, eternal, etc. Or is it something changes, is it processes and movement? This determines the kind of map that we use in navigating life. So for the reality structure, you got the Aristotelian and the non-Aristotelian. The Aristotelian, or people who think of reality as static, they tend to view life from a macroscopic or microscopic perspective, and they live in a world filled with things, objects, people, etc. Now, non-Aristotelian type of person, or people who thinks in reality in terms of processes, they tend to view life from a sub-microscopic level, which enables them to have an appreciation for the quantum levels. They also use a lot of verbs, functional language, and behavioral descriptions. So as a way to listen to someone's reality structure, you can ask them, when you think about reality, do you tend to think about it as something permanent and solid, made up of things, or do you think of it as a dance of electrons, is it fluid, ever-changing, made up of processes, very non-Aristotelian. Next, we have the communication channel preference. Now, the way we receive information from our environment comes from two primary channels, verbal and non-verbal. Now, both of these channels can provide a multitude of messages and data, but some people usually tend to favor one channel over the other. So as a way to identify, you can either be a verbal type of person. These are people that focus primarily on what other people say, the languages, the terms, the phrases. These are people who use auditory digital representation. People actually who use auditory digital representation most often tend to be verbal type of people. Then you got the non-verbal types. These are the people that focus primarily on how other people talk, such as their tone, their tempo, their breathing, their volume, their pitch, etc. And these people tend to distrust the verbal channel, and they tend to be more of an intuitive type of person. Then you got the balanced types, which are people that just use both channels equally. So as a way to elicit this, you can ask someone, when you think about communicating with somebody, what do you tend to give more importance to? What they say or how they say it? Or when you communicate, do you pay more attention to the words and phrases that you use, or to your tone, tempo, your volume, your eye contact, etc.? So guys, that's all I have here for you today for the mental motor programs. Stay tuned for part two, where we're going to go over the emotional meta program. So stay tuned for that, guys. And I have a quick question for you. Now, as we've been going over these different meta programs, have you wondered to yourself, is it possible to change your meta programs? Because actually, as a matter of fact, it is. Now, I do have a special training for you since you've watched this video all the way to the end. All you got to do is go to jamesfriendhouse.com/meta programs, all in one word. Enter your email and you're going to receive a special bonus video that's going to show you step by step how to change your meta programs. So guys, first of all, once again, I just want to thank you for watching this video. This is the first part of a 5-part series, so we got one down and 4 to go. If you're active on social media, you can follow me on Facebook, Instagram, on Twitter at PCI or ZPCI Institute. And you also can check out my website over at www.pciinstitute.net. This is James Renhouse signing off. Thanks for watching, and I'll see you on the next one. Peace. As you can see on the screen, the emotional meta programs are the meta programs that focus on emoting and somatizing. They describe how cognitive or mental processes emote as it creates our emotional states of consciousness. So the first type of emotional meta program we're going to go over is called the stress response style. Now, pretty much this sorting style relates to how people deal with stress, whether it's in the form of threat or danger. Or it takes the form of overload. Pretty much, does a person move toward threat or do they move away from it? So we got a couple of different types of stress responses. The first type is the aggressive response, and these are people who confront their stresses head on. These are people that like challenges, they like adventures, they like stress and pressure. These are the type of people that do pretty well under stress. Then you got the passive type of people. These are the people that tend to run away from the problems, and usually they want to create peace, make harmony. They tend to be a bit of a people pleaser. They just want to keep things all pleasant and nice for everyone. Then you have the assertive type, and these are people that have learned how to cope with stress by thinking and talking it out. They're not so much of a dive in head on. They try to like rationalize what it is that they're doing, but they know how to hold their ground too at the same time. So when it comes to listening to someone's stress response, you want to ask them, when you feel threatened or challenged by some stress, do you immediately respond on the emotional level by wanting to get away from it or go at it? In fact, you can also ask them to recall specific instances where they face a high stress situation. Next, we have the authority sword. Pretty much the authority sword is that we have two fundamental ways in evaluating a person, a situation, an experience, or an idea. And there's really one, two ways we can go about it. We can either do so from our own frame of reference, meaning from the internal, or we can do it from outside of our frame of reference, in other words, external. So self-referencing are people that evaluate things on the basis of what they think is appropriate. They decide within themselves and know within themselves what they want, what they need, they feel, they believe, they feel, and they value. It's all done from a self-reference. And the other references are the people that look to others for guidance, information, motivation, reasons. They tend to look for other people. They usually require a lot of feedback and information in order for them to ultimately decide what they want, what they need, what they believe, what they feel, and what they value. So, according to L. Michael Hall and Bob Bodenhammer, two highly prominent experts in the field of NLP, they say that the majority of personality models views a mentally, emotionally healthy person as someone that moves more and more towards self-referencing without losing the ability to do other referencing as needed. So as a way to elicit someone's authority, so you can ask them, where do you put most of your attention or reference? Do you put it on yourself or on others, something external to yourself? Or what do you rely on for your authority? Both good questions to ask. Next is the emotional state sort, which is as we process data, we can either do it in one of two ways, which is associatedly or disassociatedly. So people that are disassociated, these are people that process data with a certain degree of psychological distance from the emotional impact of the experience. So another way to say it's what they see, they hear, they feel, they notice these representations of something that's over there, something that is away from them that they're not experiencing internally. Whereas with someone who's associated, they think and they process data by experiencing the full emotional impact. In other words, they kind of relive whatever it is they're thinking about. So they can see it, they can hear it, they smell it, they taste it and feel it as if it's happening right now. Now, as a way to elicit someone's emotional state sort, you can ask them, think about an event in a work situation that once gave you trouble. Or what experience surrounding work would you say has given you the most pleasure or delight? Or when you make a decision, do you rely more on reason and logic, personal values, or is it something else? Next, we have the somatic response sorts. In other words, some people process information in a very active, quick, immediate, and impulsive way, while others handle information much more reflectively, thoughtfully, slowly, etc. So, hold on, my thing is kind of lagging. There we go. Sorry guys. So anyway, so as a way to identify this, there's really one of three ways. It's either active, reflective, or inactive. So for active, we got people that orient themselves as doers. They often think first and they often act first and think later. Then you have the reflective type of people, people that tend to study and ponder rather than act. Then you got the inactive people that just attempt to ignore and avoid problems or situations whenever possible. I mean, if you are one of the active person, hey, no judgment. No judgment. So as a way to elicit someone's somatic response, you can ask them, when you come into a new situation, do you usually act quickly after sizing it up, or do you do a detailed study of all the consequences before acting? The convincer sort, pretty much the convincer sort works is as we process information, we learn to value different qualities and experiences. Now this can lead us to have different strategies for feeling convinced about the value, the importance, or significance of something. So as a way to identify someone's convincer sort, you have your visual convincers, where people who act when visual qualities seem compelling, auditory convincers, people who respond to a representation that sounds right, auditory digital convincers, people who use their self-talk to produce the feelings that the choice seems logical, reasonable, or just makes sense, and you also got your kinesthetic convincers, people who base the choices on the right tactile or internal sensations. Now, we also have another concept that falls under convincing sort called a process factor, which is just a process of demonstrating the quality of believability to that person. Often, you can ask, how often does someone have to demonstrate competency before they feel convinced? Or how many times do you typically have to see, hear, read, or do something before you feel convinced about your own competency about it? Now, around 8 to 10% of people are automatic, and they really need very little convincing as much to just assume belief unless proven otherwise. Very small part of the population. Now, 50% of the population of people trust and believe when they've had a certain amount of exposure to information, experience, etc. And then next, as soon as this thing's finished loading, we have 25% of people that need exposure to occur over a certain period of time, and this allows the idea to solidify in their mind. And then you got 15% of people who almost never accept something as believable. And these are the kind of people that hardly ever feel convinced about anything. So I was about to elicit someone's convention thought. You can ask them, why did you decide on your present choice of car, if they do drive a car? Or what helps you decide what is vacation? Or what lets you know that you can believe that a product feels right for you? Next, we have the emotional direction sort. And this metaprogram relates to the focus and the diffusion of emotions. It refers to the directional quality of a person's consciousness and the experience of emoting. Alrighty. See, this is what happens when you have a slow internet connection, guys. You got this whole circle thingy happening right now. It's like, it's making me look bad. What's going on here? And I'm gonna pause this quick real, guys, just to give it some time to load. I'm gonna be right back with you in a second. All right, my computer finally decided to finish loading. So for emotional direction sort, we have a couple of different ways you can go about this. We have the multidirectional, which are people that experience emotions that affect every other aspect of their life. In extremes, this can lead to moodiness and instability, or just displaced emotions in general. Then you have the unidirectional people. These are people who keep their feelings contextualized and don't let them bleed over into other aspects of their life. At extremes, this can lead to very rigid ego boundaries and possibly develop a multiple personality disorder. Now, to a way to elicit someone's emotional direction, you can ask them, when you think about a time when you experienced an emotional state, was it positive or negative? Does it bleed over or affect some of all of your other emotional states? Or does it stay pretty focused so that it relates to the object? Next, we have emotional intensity sort. Now, it's been studied that just about everyone has a boldness / timidity factor when it comes to emoting. So you have a couple of different types. We got the surgency types, which are the high emotional intensity people who enjoy dangerous types of experiences. It could be roller coasters, skydiving, haunted houses, etc. They enjoy attention, the limelight, the center stage. So they often take more risk, and they tend to think and act in very creative ways. Then you have the desurgency type of people. These are very low emotional intensity people who crave for certainty and predictability. They tend to avoid risk and they secure themselves and routinize their lifestyles. So a way to elicit someone's emotional intensity, you can ask, when you think about a situation at work or in your personal affairs that seems risky or involving the public's eye, what thoughts and feelings immediately come to mind? So guys, that's all I have here for you today. Hope you guys got a lot of value out of that. And make sure you stay tuned for part 3, where we're going to be going over the volitional metaprograms. And let me ask you a quick question, guys. Like, now that we've gone over these programs, have you ever thought about, like, if you ever wanted to change your metaprograms? Because as a matter of fact, that is quite possible to do. Now, since you watched this video all the way to the very end, I'm going to give you a special bonus video that's going to show you exactly how to change your metaprograms. Now, all you need to do is go to jamesrittenhouse.com/metaprograms. Just input your email and you're going to receive special access to this bonus training that's going to show you step by step how to change your metaprograms. So guys, I just want to thank you again for watching. I certainly appreciate the view. Make sure you connect with me on social media, on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also check out my website over at pciinstitute.net. This is James Rittenhouse signing off. Thanks for stopping by, and I will see you on the next video. Peace. Now, the volitional metaprograms are metaprograms that are involved in willing, choosing, and coordination. These describe our operational system for deciding, opting, preferring, and just focusing attention. So the first type of metaprogram we're going to go over is called the direction sort. Now, with the direction sort, we have two directions we can move in regards to the things that we value. And over time, we can come to specialize in one or the other. So the first type of direction sort is called the towards, where people who move towards what they want, they often feel motivated to achieve, to attain, and obtain. And they often have difficulty in recognizing what they should avoid. Now, the away type of direction are people who focus on what they want to avoid, and they feel motivated to move away from and get rid of disvalues and aversions, and they often have trouble in managing priorities and goals. And a balance is a person that's able to use towards and away equal. So as a way to elicit someone's direction sort, you can ask, what do you want from a relationship or a job, or what do you value the importance about? And when you can ask, and it could be anything, it could be the importance about their job, about the religion, about the relationship, whatever the case may be. And after you get an answer, you can move to a meta level and ask for a meta outcome. And you can ask them, when you get whatever it is, what would that mean for you? Now, this will allow us to discover the complex equivalence between behaviors and values. And from there, you're just listening to words that either shows them moving towards something or moving away from something. Now, coordination, choice, and adapting, pretty much what that means is, like, when it comes to dealing with instructions or getting something done, we have two broad responding styles, which is either the procedure styles or the option styles. So coordination, choice, and adapting, first off, we have the procedures. These are people who like to follow specific and definite procedures. They often feel motivated when following a procedure and may have an almost compulsive desire to complete a procedure. And options are people who prefer to generate procedures and figure out alternatives to a strategy. And if it works, they'll prefer to improve or alter it. So as a listentation, you can ask why questions. Ask them, why did you choose your car? Why did you choose your job? Why did you choose your home? Why did you choose your town? And if a person talks about choosing and expanding options, then you know that they're an options-oriented type of person. But if they tell you a lot of facts, or they just tell you a story, or they doesn't talk about choosing, then you know they're more so of a procedure-oriented type. Now, adaptation sort is another metaprogram where, in adapting ourselves to life and to the information that influences our personal worlds, we can adapt in either one of two broad styles, which is either by seeking to understand life on its terms, or make plans to order, regulate, and control life's events. Now, the first type of adaptation sort is the judge and control. These are people who desire and attempt to make life adapt for them. They tend to live life according to plans, ideas, beliefs, hopes, and desires, as so to bring some type of order to their world. A perceived float is people who adapt themselves to life and reality by perceiving, observing, noting, and accepting. And typically, they would do what they feel like at the moment and take a more philosophical attitude towards difficulties. Kind of sounds like me in a sense. I'm kind of consider myself a very philosophical type of person. Don't mean that to my own home, but So as a way to elicit someone's adaptation sort, you can ask them, do you like to live life spontaneously as the spirit moves you, or according to a plan? Or do you find it easy or difficult to make up your mind? Lastly, if we did a project together, would you prefer we first outline and plan it in an orderly fashion? Or would you just prefer to just begin to move into it and flexibly adjust as things as we go? Now, recent sort of modal operators. Now, modal operators are words that reflect the mode of relating and operating that a person does in the world. In such words, describe the conceptual world one lives in and maps out. They reflect the reasons, the necessity or desire that a person acts as he or she does. So in necessity, someone that operates from necessity is people who operate from a model of compulsion, from laws, rules, etc. And people, they tend to use words like, I must do this, I have to do this, I should do this, etc. Then you have the desire kind of people. These are people with an optimistic point of view that can view various options and alternatives as possible. And now this could also include wants, desires, passions. And they tend to use words like, I want to do this, I would love to do that, I would love to get to do this, etc. So in order to list some of the reasons sort of modal operators, you want to ask questions that presuppose motivation. You can ask them, how did you motivate yourself to go to work today? Or what did you say to yourself that helped you get moving? Or why did you choose your present job? And notice if the person responds by giving you a reason, or if they operate from a note of necessity. Next, we have the preference source. Now, people have preferences regarding their interests. Primary interests can fall into categories of people, of places, of things, activities, or informations, why and what, or time. So as a way to identify someone's preference, people preference sort is someone that prefers people as a primary value, and they very relate well socially, but they hate to be alone. Now, a place preference is people who find lots of meaning in terms of their environment, what they see, what they feel, and what they hear in that particular context. Then you have a thing preference type of people, who are those that focus on what lies in their environment. People that focus on their possessions, on their money, their food, their surrounding. Typically, these people find their meaning and happiness in things. Now, activity are people that focus on the how of a process, and primarily they prefer liveliness and motion, and they strongly dislike just kind of sitting and meandering around. Now, information are people that source the things in terms of what they will learn, from whom, the vibe of the information, how they can apply it, etc. They're more focused on the learning experience. Then you have the time as those as who are doubt any of the meanings and categories of times of lots of experience. Like, we all know that you can use time in a couple of different contexts. So just these are those are type of people that prefer, like, that give time a lot of importance. So as a way to elicit this, someone's personal preference, you could ask them something like, what would you find is really important in how you choose to spend your next week vacation? Would it be the kind of things that they can get, the people, the activities? What would represent to them, what would it make them see it as a really great vacation? Next, you have goal striving towards adapting to expectations. Now, people differ in how they think, feel when they choose to go after their goals. Some process goal setting and reaching in a perfection style. Others do so in an optimization style. And then you got people who just don't set goals at all. So people who use a perfectionism sort are people who tend to never feel satisfied with his or her performance. They usually set unrealistically high goals, and as a result, they're constantly feeling frustrated. Then you get the optimizing sorting. These are people who do the best with what they have and they just let go of that. They set goals in manageable increments to appreciate the small successes. Then you have the defeatist sorting. These are people who avoid goal setting and achievement altogether, and they think and feel pessimistically about the whole subject. They want to touch it with a 20-foot stick. Then you got the realist sorting. These are people who just reduce the world to the bare-bone facts. They do very little dreaming of desiring, hoping, and they focus purely on just the sensory-based world. Now, as a way to listen to someone's goal striving sorts, you can ask them, tell me about a goal you have set, and how did you go about making it come true? Or if you set a goal today to accomplish something of significance, how would you begin to work on it? Next, we have the value buying sort. Now, when it comes to purchasing and deciding to purchase, we typically sort for four primary values, either the cost, the convenience, the quality, or the time. So some of that sorts on cost are people that focus on the price of an item to determine its value. Then you get a convenience are people that focus on whether or not this item serves a particular need combined with ease of use. Then you got the quality type of people who focus on the totality of features and characteristics of a product or service that bears its ability, to satisfy stated or implied needs. Then you got the time that people who focus on an item's ability to save time. Now, a way to elicit someone's value buying sort, you can ask them, what do you primarily concern yourself with? Is it the price, the convenience, the time, the quality, or is there some combination of these when you consider making a purchase? Next, we have the responsibility source. Now, people think about, sort for, and emote about the concept of responsibility in very different ways. There are some that love, desire, and want responsibility, and they move towards it. And there's other people that have a lot of pain associated with responsibility, so they tend to move away from it. Now, this operating system technically does operate as a meta program according to L. Michael Hall and Bob Bonehammer, but we decided to include it here among the volitional motor programs because it does play a very crucial role in the realm of choices. But you can also see here this also like illustrates the arbitrary nature of the categories. Now, for responsibility source, you have the over-responsible sorting. These are the people that assume too much responsibility in a given situation. They often take on caretaking roles and excel at sympathizing and wanting to make things better. Then you got the under-responsible type of people. These are people that tend to rely on others to take care of them, and they think of themselves as independent and needy. Then you got the balance folks. These are people that appropriately accept and assume the ability to respond for themselves and to others. They kind of have like that nice medium. So a way to elicit someone's responsibility sort, you can ask them, when you think about having and owning responsibility for something in a work situation or personal relationship, what thoughts and emotions are occurring to you? Or has someone ever held you responsible for something that went wrong that felt very negative to you? Or what positive experiences can you remember about someone holding you responsible for something and will validate you as responsible? Now, people convincer sort, this is a meta program that utilizes the same process that our convincer sort does, but applies to its people and how we relate to them. Now, some people use a thinking feeling pattern of trust and others use distrust. Now, there's two types of identifications for the people convincer sort. You get the distrusting type. These are people who immediately question, wonder, and just feel either a little or a lot defensive and will tend to hold back and attend the top of a very guarded position, and they don't immediately trust other people. Then you get the trusting type of people. These are the people that immediately trust. They feel connected and act very trustingly. They'll even embrace a stranger. And typically they come across as very warm, as friendly, interested, and overall a very outgoing type of person. Now, as a way to elicit someone's people convincer sort, you can ask them, when you think about meeting someone new, do you immediately have a sense of trust and openness to that person? Or is it more like thoughts and feelings of distrust, doubts, question, jealousy, etc.? Another good question you can ask is, how do you typically choose to relate to a person or a group of people before you know them well? Is it with trust or is it with caution? So guys, that's all I have for you today for the volitional meta programs. Make sure you stay tuned for part 4, where we're going to be going over the response meta programs. Now, if you've been watching these videos and if you've been wondering to yourself, how should I can change your meta programs? Well, as a special gift for watching this video all the way to the very end, I'm going to give you special access to a bonus training that's going to show you how to change your meta programs. So all you got to do is go to jameswrittenhouse.com/metaprograms. Just input your email and you're going to get access to a special video that will show you exactly how to change your meta programs. Now, the response metaprograms are metaprograms that are used in outputting, responding, and communication. Now, this includes how we act, how we gesture, somatize, behave, etc. And this implies that the information processing and sorting does not just occur in the brain, but also in the body as well. So the first type of response metaprogram we're going to be going over is the rejuvenation of battery sort. Now, this metaprogram is identified by how we process our thoughts and feelings about our social experience with others. In this regard, we tend to sort for experiencing lots of time with other people, in other words, with an extrovert, lots of time with the self, which would be like an introvert, or a balanced mixture of the two, which would be an ambivert. So an extrovert is a people who primarily turn their attention outwards to others to experience mental, emotional rejuvenation, encouragement, and personal renewal. Where an introvert is just the complete opposite of that. These are people that turn their attention inwards when they need to deal with stresses, negative emotions, demotivation, etc. And then ambivert are people that are just pretty much equal parts of introverted and extroversion. So a way to elicit someone's rejuvenation battery, you would just ask them, when you need your batteries to charge, do you want to get with others or get away by yourself, or can you equally recharge your batteries in either situation? Next, we have the affiliation and management sort. Now, this meta program refers to how a person processes and handles the experiences of working with other people in a task-oriented situation. Now, people generally process this question in terms of just staying independent, team playing, or managing. So as a way to elicit this sort, you can ask people, do you know what you need in order to feel and function more successfully at work or at this task? Or do you know what someone else needs in order to feel and function more successfully? Or do you find it easy or difficult to tell a person what he or she needs to do to succeed? Now, a person that's a self and others managing will answer yes to all three questions. They process and value and orient themselves by managing both self and others. People that are just self only will answer yes, no, and no. They have the capacity for management, but they don't want to manage. Then you have the self but not others, which are potential managers. They'll answer yes, yes or no, and they know what it takes for others to succeed, but they feel hesitant from intruding or getting involved in such communications. Then you have the team players who will answer sometimes, sometimes, and sometimes, and depending on the circumstances and context, they may or may not want to play a manager role, but may want to co-facilitate the success of the team. Now, others only or dependent workers will answer no, yes, and yes or no, and they usually wait for the boss, a system, or a spouse to tell them what to do. So communication stands for pretty much the five styles of mode of communication originally formulated by Virginia Satir, who is a world-renowned family therapist. Virginia Satir is actually one of the original people that were modeled for NLP, but that's something I talk a little bit more about in the video, when is NLP. Now, it involves four typically ineffective modes of communication, although on occasion we can put these to good use. Now, placating refers to soothing, pleasing, pacifying, and making concessions, and they are always trying to please, forever apologizing, and they never disagree. The blamers are the people who are always finding fault, dictating, and being bossy, and they tend to act superior to other people. Then you have computing, which refers to a detached attitude to your emotions. Distracting refers to responding in an unpredictable way that always alters and interrupts others and oneself. And the distractor will cycle rapidly among the other patterns and constantly shift modes. And leveling represents communicating and relating in an assertive way so that one's words and actions expresses one true and honest state. So as a way to elicit someone's communication stance, you can say, how do you typically communicate in terms of placating, blaming, computing, distracting, or leveling? Now, general response style is that when we respond to people, things, information, events, we can do so in various ways according to the style and the energy expended, either congruently, incongruently, competitively, cooperatively, with polarity, or with a meta response. So with a congruent response is to feel in accordance with something, and the response fit the nature and quality of the internal states of representation. Incongruence is people that think and feel in one way while responding to another's, so the response does not fit their representations of the state. Competitive are people who process and experience thought or emotion in terms of comparison and competition, cooperative or people who think in terms of assisting and helping other people to sharing the experience, polarity or flipping to the opposite pole of a choice or response, and a meta response is processing information at a higher logical level by going above immediate content and having thoughts about it. So for listening to someone's general response style, you can ask, when you come into a situation, how do you usually respond? You respond either one, with a sense of feeling and acting congruent and harmonious with your thoughts and feelings, or do you respond with a sense of not feeling or not acting congruent and harmonious with your thoughts and feelings, or do you respond with a sense of cooperation with a subject matter or with a feeling of disagreements, or do you prefer to go above the meaning context and have thoughts about the situation? Next, we have somatic response style. Now, this somatic program utilizes the same process as a somatic response, and this is in the way we use it in this context is we apply it to social context as we respond to people and events. So, as a way to identify someone's somatic response style, the first type is a socially active, which are people that immediately take action. They often talk fast, they think fast, and they act fast. You got the socially reflective type, the people who typically like to study and think prior to taking action in reference to groups. Then you got the socially balanced, who are people who utilize both styles in a balanced way. So this would be like as a question, like how would you go about eliciting someone's somatic response? Are you doing it in a socially active way, a socially reflective way, or in a socially balanced way? Pretty much the questions would just be phrased in a way to elicit someone's somatic response. Next, we have the work preference sort, which is when we engage in a significant activity of work, career, vocation, etc., we operate with different preferences about what to work with things, systems, people, or information. So we kind of visited this before, but real quick, on work preference, we have things. These are people who focus on getting a job done, accomplishing goals, and the end result of a task completed. We have systems, that are people who think and care primarily about processes, interrelationships, cause-effects relations, plans, and procedures. And then as a way to elicit someone's preference source, you can just ask them to share a work situation where they felt the most happiest or the most pleased. Next, we have the comparison sort, which is a meta program that informs us about the nature of the comparisons that we use in comparing things or deciding between two or more options. And we can make these comparisons in two broad ways, either quantitatively or qualitatively. Now, quantification sorting are people that solve with concrete details and will answer questions by giving numbers, ranks, order, measurements, etc., and they tend to think and reason inductively. Now, qualification sorting are people that tend to use words referring to the quality of the experience, either good, better, poor, bad, excellent, etc. They tend to start at a global level and they tend to reason deductively or abductively. Now, as a way to elicit someone's sort for comparison, you can ask them, how do you evaluate your work? Or how would you evaluate things in your relationship? Or how would you choose between two restaurants? Next we got it is the knowledge source source, which is a meta program that provides information about how a person decides that she can do something where she gathers that data or information. Now knowledge source had a couple of different identifications. We first had the modeling, where people who look externally to those who have both a knowledge base and the ability to produce. The conceptualizing, who people who are good at gathering information by studying, researching, thinking, and talking, etc. Then we had the demonstrations, where people who prefer a less personal and more distant style of learning, like a classroom demonstration. Then we have experiencing, which are people who gather information self-referentially using a kinesthetic system, and authorized is people that use an authority figure as their source of information. So as a way to elicit someone's knowledge source, you can ask them, what source of knowledge do you consider authoritative and reliable? And from where would you gather reliable information that you can trust? Or when you decide that you will do something, where do you get the information to do it from? Alright, so next we have the closure sort. And the way the closure sort works is that whenever we process information, we sometimes complete it, and sometimes we do not complete the information processing. And whatever the reason, this model program addresses the subject of how we handle closure and or the lack of closure. Now, there's two types of closure people. There's the non-closure type, who are people who do not have a need for closure, and they tend to perform better in the beginning, in the middle of a task, a project, relationship, etc. Then you have the people that have a strong desire for closure, and they tend to think more in definitive and black and white ways. So as a way to elicit someone's closure, you can ask them, if in the process of studying SUSM, if you had to break off study and leave it, would you feel okay about this, or would you feel disconcerting? Or when someone begins a story but doesn't complete it, how do you feel about that? Or when you get involved in a project, do you find yourself more interested in the beginning, the middle, or the end of the project? Next we have is a social presentation sort. This was originally formulated by Cattell back in 1989, and this describes two different ways we can move through life in... give me 1 second, guys. All right, sorry about that technical difficulty. So yeah, so the Solson presentation, it was originally formulated by Cattell back in 1989, and he describes two different ways we can move through life in relation to other people and social groups: as heartless, warm, spontaneous, and naive, or shrewd, artful, and socially correct. So the shrewd and artful types are the people that care about the impression that they make on others, and such people usually have lots of social ambition. The genuine artists are the people that disvalue social presentation and have little to no social ambition, and they may come across as artless and crude in their social manners. So as a way to elicit someone's social presentation, you can ask them, when you think about going out into a social group or out in public, how do you generally handle yourself? Do you really care about your social image, or do you not care and just want to be yourself, open, honest, and transparent? Now, the hierarchical dominant source is a metaprogram that relates to how a person adapts to the power moves of others, one-upmanship, put-downs, bossiness, etc. It describes a person the style uses in handling power or in not handling it at all. So a few ways to identify this is, first you got the power types. These are people that operate fully as a hierarchical animal and value the experience of dominating, competing, playing politics. They tend to think in win-lose situations. Affiliation are people who operate by managing relationships, by turning on courtesy and cooperation. They tend to think more of win-win. And then you got the achievement types, people who care most about getting things done, practical results, etc. So as a way to elicit someone's hierarchical dominance, you can ask them, or ask yourself even, evaluate your motives in interacting with others in terms of your motivational preferences between power, dominance, competition or politics, affiliation, relationship, courtesy and cooperation, and achievements, results, goals, and objectives. And using 100 points as your skill, distribute those 100 points among these three styles of handling power. Now guys, that's all I have for you today as far as these meta programs go. Make sure you stay tuned for part 5, which is going to be the last part of our series, where we're going to be going over the meta programs. Super excited about that, guys. We're almost towards the end, and we've already gone over a lot of information. So if you stuck with me this far, I just want you to know I really do appreciate you a lot, and it's only going to continue to keep getting better from here. So the meta programs are meta programs about conceptual and semantic realities, identity, self, and time, and they describe the prior formatting of conceptions that constrains consciousness. So the meta programs, according to L. Michael Hall and Bob G. Bodenhammer, will impact more pervasively than the entire perceptual system than just the regular motor programs. Higher logical levels, in other words, the meta programs, always drive, modulate, organize, and form the lower levels. So the place for us to go in order to get more persuasive change exists in the higher logical levels, in other words, the meta programs. So the value sort. The value sort is our values, which is just a nominalization of value, arise from and take the form from our thoughts, our ideas, and our understandings about what we deem as important. In other words, whatever is significant and meaningful for us. So as a way to identify someone's value is pretty much whatever you believe holds significance, we can transform into a value. And values can be just about anything. It could be fitness, it could be politics, health, achievement, power, volunteering, meaning, just about anything could be a value. And now as a way to elicit someone's value source, you can ask, you inquire about anything. You could just ask what the person thinks is valuable, important, or significant about that thing, whether it's a job, a relationship, an idea, etc. Next, we have the temper to instruction sort. Now, this meta-level meta-programs relates to how we experience ourselves when face-to-face with someone telling us something. How do we relate and respond when another person provides us information? Do we have a natural tendency to comply, to question, or to just resist such information? So there's two types of people that fall under the temper to instruction. You got the strong-willed types. These are people that have a very difficult time being told anything. And then you got the compliant type, which are the people who respond to instruction in a very pliable, open, and sensitive way. So to elicit someone's temper to instruction, you can ask them, can someone tell you something? Or you can ask yourself, can someone tell you something? How do you think and feel when you receive instructions? Or how well can you tell yourself to do something and carry it out without a lot of internal resistance? Next, we have the self-esteem source, which is one of our most basic modalities, awareness of all that which deals with our sense of self. Self-esteem refers to the valuation of worth, dignity, and the beingness to our ontological self. So as a way to identify someone's self-esteem, just listen for how a person thinks and feels about their self as a person and as a doing, a human being and human doer. Do you hate conditional factors? Does their ability to esteem go up and down according to their fate or experiences? Very important things to pay attention to. Now, as a way to elicit someone's self-esteem, you can ask, do you think if your value as a person is conditional or unconditional? Or when you're seeing yourself as valuable, worthwhile, or having dignity, do you base it on something you do have or possess, or do you base it upon a given? Your inherent humanity, made in God's image, or whatever you call your higher being, image and likeness, etc. Next, we have the self-confidence orb, which is one's faith in our abilities or skills to do the things that lies at the heart of the phenomenon that we call self-confidence. Now, people with low self-confidence are people who lack belief in their abilities, and they only focus on the things that they cannot do well. Whereas people with high self-confidence are people who believe in their abilities and able to count many things that they can do with confidence, like making one's bed, cooking a meal, going to work, etc. So as a way to elicit someone's self-confidence, you can ask someone, as you think about some of the things that you can do well and that you know without a doubt you can do well, may even take pride in your ability to do them skillfully, make a list of those items. And how confident do you feel about your skills in doing these things? And how have you generalized these from these specific self-confidence to your overall sense of self-confidence? Next, we have the self-experience force, where people differ in the concept of self and the factors that use and factor into the self-definition. What and how a person defines him or herself plays a central role in the self out of which they come, and the self that they use at the meta level. So for self-experience, you got the mind, you got the people who define themselves in terms of their mental activity, the emotion, the people who define themselves in terms of how they emote, the will, the people who define themselves according to the willpower, the body, the people who define themselves according to the physical attributes, the role, the people who define themselves according to the roles, the occupation, the job, etc., or the spirit, people who define themselves according to the metaphysical attributes. So as a way to elicit some of my self-experience, you can ask about, as you think about your thoughts, your emotions, your will, your body, your roles and positions that you experience in life, which facet or facets of yourself seem the most important, real, or valid? And do you think of yourself primarily as a thinker, as an emotional person, a chooser, in terms of your physical looks or body, in terms of your roles or positions, or what? How do you think of yourself? Next, we have the self-integrity. How do you sort regarding things living up to your values? How do you think about your ideals and especially your ideal self? And then evaluate how well or how poorly you live up to those ideals. This type of awareness creates a sense of self-integration or its lack. So for self-integrity, you have people that are congruent, which are those who experience the comparison between the ideal is an ideal self with the actual experience as congruous and fitting. And this provides a strong sense of self-acceptance and centering. Then you got the incongruent types. These are people that feel inwardly torn and at odds with themselves, and this frequently leads to negative emotions and negative judgments of insult towards oneself. So as an elicitation question, when you think about how well or how poorly you live up to your ideals and in actualizing your ideal self, do you feel integrated, congruous, doing a good job and living true to your values and visions? Or do you feel torn, conflicted, unintegrated, or incongruous? Now we have the time tense sword. Now most humans live in most cultures sort for three central time zones. These show up in linguistic tenses as well as temporal tenses of the past, the present, and future. And how does a person have his or her timeline coded in terms of past, present, and future? Now you got people that mind the past. You got people who think about what they have experienced and what those experience or event meant to them. They use a lot of past references and past tenses in the language. Then you got the people that mind the present. These are people that live today or in the now. They have a present tense orientation in the way they talk and reference things. Then you got the people that mind the future. You got those who primarily use future tenses and references. And then you got the people that don't mind time at all, that just live outside of a time consciousness. So as a way to elicit some of the time tense sword, you can ask, where do you put most of your attention? On the past, the present, or the future? Or have you developed an atemporal attitude that you don't attend to time at all? Next, we have the time experience sorts. Now, how we code our sense of historical time and its duration from event to event over a period of time creates our representational image or icon of it. And this typically takes the form of a timeline of some sort. So for time experience sorts, through time, you got people who store their memories from left to right or up to down, so that for them, time has a continuous coding along a continuum. And they typically have their memories associated. Then you got the people that are in time. These are people who store the past behind them and the future in front of them. So the timeline goes right through their body so that they end up in the line, and they typically code their memories associated. Now for a time experience source, as a way to elicit, you could ask them, as you take a moment to relax and feel inwardly calm, allow yourself to recall a memory of something that occurred sometime in your past and something else from long ago. Now think of some event that occurred today in another. Now think of an event that will occur one of these days, in another future event. And as you now stand back or above these time places in your mind, point to the direction of your future and point to the direction of your past. Now next we have the time access sword. Now this metaprogram relates to how we access our memories of the past, and it functions as a subcategory of how we store or code time itself, which was a previous metaprogram we went over. Now for time access swords, you get random access. You get people that organize memories that compare different events that occurred at different times. These memories tend to be unconnected, allowing them to easily jump from one memory to another. Then you got the sequential access, which are people who code their memories in a very linear and connected way, and it's often more difficult for them to access memories. So as a way to elicitation, you could just use the same elicitation that we use for time experience sorts to elicit the time access sort. Okay, next we have the ego strength sword, which is our ego strength refers to our ability to perceptually adapt and mediate between needs and the environment. So the first type of ego strength sword is the instability sword. These are the people who are easily and quickly feel frustrated by the tiniest annoyance. They can perceive almost anything as a difficulty, they worry and fret about it, they feel insecure, etc. Then you got the stability sort. These are those who take a more philosophical attitude towards life. They know that any worthwhile goal will involve expecting and accepting problems, roadblocks, etc. And they try to stay cool, calm, and collected in the face of undesirable occurrences. So as a way to elicit someone's ego strength, you can ask, when you think about some difficulty arising in everyday life, a disappointment, a problem, a frustration that will block your progress, etc., what usually comes to your mind? How do you feel about such events? How do you typically respond to internal needs or external hardships? And where do your mind emotions go when you face a problem? Next we have is a morality sword. Now how people sort for issues and concerns that fall into the categories of right and wrong, morals, ethics, etc. Some people see, hear, and sort for moral issues everywhere and all the time, and others seem to operate as if such categories do not exist. So we have the unconscientious sword. These are people that have a really weakly developed superego. They tend not to recognize or sort for true guilt. They disregard obligations, rules, ethics, morals, etc. Then you get the conscientious sword. These are those who have a well-developed superego, whom sort for righteousness or wrongness of events, especially those that truly fulfill or violate genuine moral standards. Now, as a way to elicit someone's morality sword, you can ask, when you think about some misbehavior that you engage in, what thoughts and feelings arise when you realize that you had acted in an appropriate way that violated legitimate values? Or when you think about messing up, doing something embarrassing, stupid, socially inept, etc., what thoughts and feelings flood your consciousness along with that realization? Next is we have the causational sword. How does a person think about the cause of an event or experience? Or what brings something into existence? Now you have the no causation types, which are the people who think no causation exists and so no explanation or process is. You got the total and absolute linear causation people who think those who believe everything results from direct and immediate causation. You got the multi-causational, which are people who recognize that almost always multiple or contributing factors come together to create various effects. They got the personal cause and effect, which are people who think in terms of the roles in causing, affecting, and influencing things. So as a way to elicit someone's causational sort, externality are people who think that they play into the role of causing, affecting, or influencing things. You get the magical types, or the people who believe that everything is caused by forces and or entities beyond this world or dimension. Then you get the correlation, then you got people who believe causes actually exist only as correlations. So we got quite a few types for the causational sort. So guys, let me ask you a quick question. Would you like to be able to change your metaprograms? And we just gone through a lot of information right now. We just gone through 5 parts. We've gone through a ton of metaprograms. So let me ask you, would you want to change your metaprograms? And if the answer is yes, then I have a special bonus video for you that you can watch that will show you how to change your metaprograms. All you have to do is go to jamesrandhouse.com/metaprograms and put your email, and you'll get access to a special bonus video that will show you exactly how to change your metaprograms. So guys, I just want to thank you for watching this video as well as this entire video series on the metaprograms. Hope you guys got a lot of value out of it, and I hope you also put in your email for the previous link that I put over here, so that way you can get access to that bonus video training, so that way you can learn how to change your metaprograms. If you want to connect with me, you can connect with me on social media, over on Facebook, on Instagram, and on Twitter, and you can visit my website as well on pciinstitute.net.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.